Michael Jordan is not only the best basketball player, but he's the most exciting basketball player to ever play.
Tatum fires away, pumps it in! 51 for Jason Tatum!
The Big Three NBA Podcast is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Big Three NBA Podcast. A'Shaun Blakely, Gary Washburn, I'm Kwani Lunis. Let's get right into it. The Celtics already broke their 11-game win streak in Atlanta. A sneaky win from the Hawks. Let's just recap what you two took away from that loss on Monday night.
Tatum got buckets. That's pretty much all that happened in that game. Tatum got buckets. He also got frustrated a little bit, too. You can see the Hawks, you know, they were very physical with him. They did not let him get to his spots with ease. And Tatum didn't really like that. He still got his points, but you never got the feeling after maybe in the second half that the Celtics were in the kind of control we're used to. You were kind of waiting for them to just flip that switch and just blow them out. But the Hawks, give them credit. The Hawks made a lot of shots they normally don't make. They made plays that they normally don't make. The Celtics did. It looked for many of us who watched this team play, it looked like copy, you know, rinse, recycle, repeat for the Celtics, where they jumped on them early. They got a nice, comfortable lead. Team got back in a little bit, but the Celtics went by 20. And that just didn't happen the latter part. So, Hawks, way to go, Hawks. Number 10 team, got to win. Well done.
Got to keep it fun.
Gary.
Yeah, you can't blow a 30-point lead. The loss is, I felt, embarrassing, unacceptable, considering what they've been through this year, and considering they blew the 22-point lead in the fourth quarter 3 weeks ago in Cleveland. Like, you know, and it's something they need to watch out for. I'm not saying this is, oh, boy, they're not gonna go to the finals. Oh, they're going to lose the first round. No, I'm not saying any of that, but you can just see it. Like, it was 68-38, and they were rolling. And then Atlanta scores literally 18 points in the last 4 minutes of the first half. You're like, okay, because they couldn't. They were inept. Our friend, Lauren Williams, came up to me when it was 49-22 and was like, see what I'm talking about? They're terrible. Like, she was, and I was just like, damn, because they looked terrible. The Hawks looked like they didn't want to be there. You cannot lose that game. You cannot give them life. That run gave them life, and then they start out the second half with a 19-4 run. You're like, wait a minute. Like, you can't be serious here. Like, that just can't happen. I don't care. You know, and you can go into, well, the Hawks were more physical, and they played stronger defense, but you got to win that game. And the Celtics hit 1 3-point. They were 1 for 15, and a lot of things, bad things happened. But when you cheat the game, you start pulling up for 30-footers. You start thinking that you're the Globetrotters and the Hawks are the Washington Generals, and that you aren't there to put on a show, and the fans in Atlanta are there to see you, and this is a team that's going to lay down. You start messing with the game will mess with you. And I felt like the game messed with them. 1 for 15 from the 3-point line in the second half. Sam Hauser had a lot of open. He was 2 for 10. Jason turned the ball over down the stretch. Jalen takes like a contested three. And then the Hawks just started to play well. They felt it. Bruno Fernando looked like Shaq in there sometimes. Clint Capella with that key. It was just a lot of bad things. It was very reminiscent. I was here in Atlanta 10 years ago when they blew a 27-point lead under Brad. It was like the 14-15 season, I want to say. One of the final days of Rondo, and it was just very reminiscent. Like, you can't blow. It's the biggest blown lead since 1997, according to the Celtics stats. You know, like, that can't happen. And I'm not saying, oh, I'm down on this team. They'll never look like. But this is something they got to be aware of. You can't use just tactical basketball excuses. This was mental. Like, this was laying, this was taking your foot off the gas. Oh, we got this. And we got 2 days off in Atlanta before we play these chumps again. Oh, we got this. That was what happened. And the Hawks started playing well, playing harder, getting the loose balls, hitting threes. This Vic Krejci kid comes off the bench on a two-way contract, starts sparking them, hitting a couple of pull-up threes. Bogdanović started getting – it was just the avalanche. So as much as I'm – well, it's just a game, and congrats to the Hawks. And it's 30-point lead, man. And I was – they scored 49 points in the first 13 minutes of the game. I mean, 49 points. And from then on, and they were – let's say, Al hits a three, 68-38. You're like, yeah –
Yeah, that's it. We're done.
Yeah. 4 minutes, 23 seconds left in the half. And all of a sudden, the Hawks just started cutting. It was all of a sudden, it was 18 at halftime. And you know, it was like 18 is nothing in the NBA these days. And it's like, yeah, the Celtics had to feel kind of a sour taste in their mouth in the at the end of the first half. Like, damn, we kind of gave them some life. Then you're like, okay, restore some order. Nope, that didn't happen. So everybody's involved. Joe, Jason, Jalen, the bench. You know, they didn't get a lot of production from Hauser. You know, they didn't get a lot of production from Al. It just, Porzingis had his moments, but, you know, in Atlanta had 15 offensive rebounds. Capella and Bruno were allowed to really man the paint. So a lot of things just to watch out for as they move forward, especially with taking their opponents lightly and up here, doing the mental breakdown and the mental, you got to be mentally tougher than that. Like, you got to be mentally tougher than that.
You should be mentally tougher than that. But, but Gary, the way this team has played this year, they were way overdue to have a game or two or three like that this year. And they've had a couple. But the one common thread that they've had in those games is the teams that have done this to them. I'm thinking of this one, and I'm thinking of the Cleveland game. The common thread between those two things, other than being in the East, is that they were without their best player. Each of those teams did play without their best player. And the Celtics, and this was an issue that we've had with them in the past, and we've seen it time and time and time again, way more than we have this year. In the past, we've seen it, where they don't just let up off the gas. They just basically going off the steering wheel and the gas, and they just rolling down the street with no control over what is happening in that moment. And we saw it in Cleveland. We saw it against Atlanta, who was playing without Trae Young. And that's I agree that concerns me, their inability to recognize a wounded team and just bury them. That I am concerned about. But when they played teams that weren't great, but that great team had most of their core guys, they treat them with the kind of respect they deserve, and that's smash them to itty bitty pieces. But when teams are maybe average or slightly below average and they're missing a core guy, those are the games that they need to be better at. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, they're going to see a lot of those teams down the stretch here. And see, I'm to be honest, I've been surprised at how well they've handled their business on this road trip, because most of the teams they're playing are trash. If we're going to be honest and real about it.
Even your Pistons?
As I said, most of the teams that they're playing are trash on this road trip, if we're being honest and real about
Rod.
It.
They ain't going to let you back in Detroit, man.
Oh, my goodness. For speaking the truth.
Wow. Yeah, that's what we got as a nation right now. Speaking the truth, get us in trouble.
Exactly. You know how the D is. Anyway, I do. But my point, I think my point is this. It's not recognizing the slide, right? It began in the end of the first half when you thought you had the lead, you thought you had this game, you were ready to, you know, they had a scheduled team dinner after the game at a nice local steakhouse.
They were running late on time.
Yeah, they were like, you know, let's get the hell up out of here.
Get some shrimp out of here and get this game over with. Yeah. Get some shrimp.
And they had a nice team dinner scheduled. So you know, Damon Stoudemire, their former assistant, is there watching them play. I'm sure he wants to, you know, break bread with the guys. It's all good. They're feeling great. And then the slippage. And the question is not blowing leads, guys, it is what you do when you start seeing that slippage. Yeah. The end of the first half was slippage. You get out.
The players or the coach?
You allow 38 points in the first whatever minutes, 20 minutes of the game, 18 in the last four. Like, that's a problem. What did they make those halftime adjustments? Did they say, okay, we don't like what happened? Hey, guys, like, we don't like what happened. You should want to make your night easier. Blow these dudes out. Take the fourth quarter off. We got an early night. Hit the showers. Do your little media obligations and get to dinner or whatever you want to do in the ATL. Whatever is out there. Plenty out there. It's an ATL. So,
is that more on Joe?
Huh?
Is that more on Joe?
I think it's more on Joe, and it's and people were looking at a point guard, Derek. They were missing Trey Young. They were missing Jalen Johnson. They're missing Okwangwu. Like, come on. Like, you can't keep blaming. Like, you're missing guys, but they're missing guys too. Mm-hmm. And they're playing. They're starting a two-way guy. They're playing Bruno Fernando, who couldn't get on the court in Boston. Like, you know, and I'm not saying Bruno's he's gotten better. He's a force when he gets in the paint. You know, because he's big and he's strong. But it's like you're playing against their lower guys. You know, DeAndre Hunter's a very good player, but he was not. He all of a sudden turned it on. You know, DeJounte Murray, he had like, you know, I think 22. DeJounte Murray didn't go for 40. He had like 22.
19 and 15, man.
Yeah, 19, like 15. He wasn't just like, oh man, that dude just put the team on his back. Like, to me, it's not doing anything about the slippage. Taking, oh well, teams make runs. No, man, like. Put them out of their misery. Even it up. Even if you're up 30 and you go at the end of the last 4 minutes, y'all go 10 to 10. You're still up 30. You get outscored 18 to 6. You allow 18 points. That's a concern. And then what happened in the – I remember I said, okay, let's see how they come out in the third quarter. Third quarter, Atlanta calls an action. The first play of the third quarter, and I think Capella got an easy dunk. And I'm like, yeah, it's this game is not going to be competitive. That cut it to 16. And you're like, yeah, that was too easy. Like, they just came out, whatever the first play of the second half, Capella dunk. Yep.
I love sound effects.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, Sherrod. You're a master. I saw the first play. That's when I knew that this was going to be the first play of the second half, when they ran a quick, easy play dunk. And you're like, okay, Celtics, like, wake up. What's going on here? Get some stops, hit the boards, you know, and it wasn't the 3-point shooting. The 3-point shooting was bad. 1 for 15 in the second half. They didn't take 75 threes. I'm not going to turn around. Oh, it was threes. But, you know, you're 1 for 15, and if they hit 11 and you hit one, you're asking to get beat. And that's what happened in the second half. Atlanta got hot, but you got to – before the drip turns into the hole gets bigger and it turns into a flood, you got to stop that up. And that's what I blame. I don't blame them for the fourth quarter and it's competitive and plays happen and all that. You shouldn't even let it get there.
Hello everyone, this is Ashraf Blakely, part of the CLNS Media Network, and I wanted to tell you about one of our friends, Prize Picks. It's the largest DFS, that's daily fantasy sports platform in North America. It is the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You want to play alongside some of PrizePicks' favorite players like rapper Meek Mill or comedian Andrew Schultz? You can now find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the PrizePicks community each week. PrizePicks is really simple to play. You can make your picks, submit your entries, and do this in less than 60 seconds. Yes, that's right, less than 60 seconds. PrizePicks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday. Who doesn't love Taco Tuesday? Every Tuesday, PrizePicks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value. PrizePicks also offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account as we count down these final weeks until the NBA playoffs start. As a longtime fantasy league player myself, Prize Picks is the perfect what's next to satisfy my fantasy league itch. You want in too? Here's what you have to do. First, you got to go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's right, prizepicks.com/CLNS. Use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. So, that being said, you get a chance to pick more. You can pick less. It's that easy.
Thinking about other areas of concern, Drew Holiday still out with his arm. Are you too concerned about the fact that he's still out? But also, is there a possibility that this could become a Malcolm Brogdon 2.0 situation?
I'm concerned. I mean, I'm not ready to hit the panic button yet, but I'm definitely
hands hovering.
You know, I'm like, because here's the thing. I mean, when you look back at last season, not having a kind of fairy tale ending the Celtics 1-2, you can go through a bunch of reasons, but when you have the best sixth man in the league and he plays at the level that Malcolm did because of his health, and you come up short, that was a big deal in why your season ended when it did. Now, Drew Holiday has been great this year. I mean, you start looking at him, particularly from the corner three spot. I mean, he's the best in the league. You look at the experience. You look at the wild card of all wild cards with Drew Holiday. He's the only one in your rotation with a chip. He's the only one who knows what this journey to the end of the line looks like and be the last team standing. And you want guys with that experience. You want guys with that talent and ability to be in the mix, because when things get a little grimy, get a little dirty, and it gets real tight, he's the one guy you ain't worried about getting tight, because he's been there, done that, achieved that. And so his health does concern me. I do like the fact that the Celtics are, you know, they're not trying to rush him back. And to be frank, I don't think they could, even if they wanted to. I think this injury is – I think he's, like, legitimately not playing because he legitimately can't play, as opposed to a load management type of situation. So, yeah, I'm concerned. Because, hell, yeah, I'm very concerned about this, because, you know, as much as we talk about Porzingis as being an X factor, having a guy that does all the things that Drew Holiday can do and, more importantly, is comfortable – step into the backdrop, let everyone else get to shine. But every now and then, there's going to be a game where you're going to need your best on-ball defender to play like All-Star Drew, which we've seen him capable of doing on any given night. To know that he's not going to be able to do that, and that's assuming that this injury doesn't heal properly, that's concerning, because that means you're not going to go into the playoffs being the best version collectively that you can be.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned probably as Sherrod. I mean, talking to him yesterday in terms of Drew Holiday, I think he seems like he's close now. When will they bring him back? Will they bring him back on this trip? You know, it sounded like something he's going to need to monitor, though. You know, he ran into Rashawn Holmes from Washington on the screen. You sound like he damaged his AC joint, which did make his arm kind of dead for a while, but he was working out. It was his right arm, his shooting arm. I think he's close, but obviously the Celtics are going to be cautious. 10 games left now. So, but you do need to get him back into the fold for some of these competitive games. There's going to be some competitive games coming up. Oklahoma City, Sacramento, a game at Milwaukee. There's still some competitive games left. The Celtics are still going to need to show something and figure some things out. Like the coasting thing and, oh, rest everybody and let everybody. You don't want that. Not for 10 damn games. Not at all. You want to throw your lineup out there. They still play the Knicks, and those teams are fighting for playoff seeding and position. Sacramento's trying to avoid the play-in. Oklahoma City's trying to get the number one seed in the West. Milwaukee's trying to fight off whoever's going to be third in terms of Cleveland or New York. So there's a lot to play for those teams. And the Celtics have a lot to play for too. So I think he'll be back soon. I don't know about like Thursday or you know, in Atlanta or Saturday in New Orleans. But I do think as long as I do think it's something he needs to monitor, though. I don't think he's going to be, oh, I'm pain free. It's 100%. I think he's going to maybe have to wear some type of apparatus, maybe, or just to make sure padding, that when he gets hit, if he gets hit on that spot again on a screen, because it wasn't like, you know, we're not talking about, you know, like Andre Drummond. Rashawn Holmes is a big, strong guy, but it wasn't like he got, like, Holmes just crunched him, or, you know, it was probably just the perfect place for the contact. But I do think it's something he's going to have to monitor. And so I'm not as concerned as Sherrod, but I'd like to see him get back on the floor and just kind of play some minutes and get back to what he was.
And to your point, Gary, I think the way this schedule is playing out, I'm almost reluctant to play him against teams like New York, teams that have something real tangible they're playing for, because you may see them in the playoffs, and he's the type of dude that I want to keep them guessing as to where he's at health-wise. Like, I'm playing him against the crappy squads. I'm playing him against the teams that I can play him 25 minutes and we win by 25. That's what, if I'm Joe Mazzulla, I don't want New York to get a beat on him. I don't want Milwaukee to get a sense of where he's at. I want them to be guessing. I'm trying to play chess with them fools right now. And Drew is one of my pieces on the board.
I'd rather play him against top players than play him against some of these two-way guys who are going to be playing with their, you know, hair on fire and making plays and trying to get the dude and getting dudes injured. Like, some of these guys are going to be out there playing for their lives. And, you know, you play some of these bad teams, you get these two-way guys, you get these guys on 10 days, and they're going to be out there running up and down and running into fools, trying to get more minutes and trying to earn it. And all of a sudden, dudes get hurt. Like, it depends on how you look at it. Yeah, like, I don't think Drew Holiday's got some secret sauce move that he ain't shown everybody. That you don't want him to show against the Knicks. He is who he is. I do think, but I'm afraid against some of these lower teams, you know, the Charlottes or whatever, that you got guys out there running, like, you know, who don't care, who are just who are fighting for minutes. And so, to me, but I do think he needs to come back when he's completely healthy, play 3 or 4 games to the final 10, and get himself all the rest and all the shoulder rehab. He said he didn't have imaging on it, so that's a good sign. It wasn't like they did an MRI or X-ray. And I think the Celtics, as understanding, are being very cautious with their players. They're trying to just get to the finish line, you know, and it would have been good for them to get a nice dub in Monday. Then you can probably rest everybody Thursday, right? And then feel good. Now they feeling like, man, we got to get these dudes back. We coming off a 30-point loss. It was embarrassing. So I think now you've kind of made it harder on yourself. I mean, you can still rest guys, but you're not trying to lose 2 in a row with these guys, right? Now you want some get back. So that's the thing about making, even if they had won by 1 point, you'd say, well, you know, they almost blew it, but they executed the end. They did it. Okay, Jason, Jalen, you know, take Thursday off. Get some rest. We'll see you in New Orleans. Now it's like all them fools are going to want to come back and play, you know, and now they're going to want to smash the Hawks in the mouth. And now it makes it more difficult.
Well, this will be my last point on this. I'm not crazy about the idea of Tom Thibodeau and Doc Rivers knowing that Drew is not 100%, because you know when they play, they're going to run so much pick and roll at Drew to test that shoulder. So much pick and roll. And so even though you're right, the two-way busters who are just trying to get them a
wow, ain't, what you call them, busters?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, these NBA players survive. Come on, they're calling busters, man. That's a low blow, man.
The two-way players. How's that, Gary? Better.
Quani, what do you think of the word buster? That's not a compliment.
It was definitely
not a compliment. I didn't mean it to be a compliment.
Buster. Why you call them busters? Go ahead.
The two-way players.
These are young guys trying to make a living. Go ahead. Sorry.
But Doc Rivers and Tom Thibodeau types are going to make Drew's life as hard as possible in those games, because they know that, oh, that shoulder, we know that shoulder is not quite right, even if he's able out here to play. So we're going to test it out. We're going to run him in pick and roll all day long. And even if we win the game, or even if we lose the game, if that kind of weakens him a little bit, we're good. That's my concern. I'm concerned. That's why when you play busters, they're not, they're going to try hard, but Drew's a better player. Yeah. And the Knicks and playoff teams like that, they got players that are legitimately guys you got to worry about who can do some things. So that's my biggest concern with Drew coming back and playing against like the Knicks, the Bucks, those type of teams. I'm worried they're gonna intentionally play the game legitimately, but put him in positions where they're gonna test that shoulder out more than some other teams would. They got nothing to play for.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. Peyton Pritchard on Monday night, we saw him play 28 minutes, 15 points. A good amount of Peyton Pritchard time. What do you two think about his development so far this season, and how do you think he can potentially contribute moving forward?
Come on, Gary. That's your Pac-12 boy. Go on.
I think Peyton's played well. I think he's really played the best basketball so far of his career. He's really playing confidently. I'm really impressed with how he's running the offense, but also how he's scoring at the rim. He uses his little bulk. I mean, he's a small guy, but he's strong. You know, he ain't to be pushed around in there, right? And he can use that. He uses his crafty moves to get to the rim, get to the layup. You know, he had a couple of, you know, he brought back single-handedly when the Hawks cut it to three. He made, I think, two or three hoops in a row to kind of extend it back to 11, even though the Celtics lost a lead again. But I've been impressed with how he's played. I think this has been a really breakthrough season for him. You know, I think we all kind of wondered what's going to happen with him. And I don't think that personally Peyton got done right either. Like he played that rookie year under Brad. He was in the rotation. Ime comes and just like, dog, I don't like you. Not like you personally. I don't like what you bring. You're not going to play much. You know, not, I don't know. You know,
you're a buster.
Yeah, like it was a they had Portland ties. So I'm saying Ime didn't like personally like Pritchard. Don't say that. But he just didn't like what he must have brought to the court because his playing time decreased. And then last year, Joe's sliced it even almost further, right? So you're after 3 years, you're like, okay, well, where is he going? What does he bring to the team? And then he admitted last year he wanted to be traded. He wanted a new opportunity. He wanted to hoop. It didn't happen. And then this year he signs the extension and then gets a shot and has done really well with his shot in the rotation. His shooting has been great. His ability to score at the rim. So I've been overall thoroughly impressed with what Peyton Pritchard thought, because I don't know if any of us felt what is he going to do? What's, you know, can he fill a backup point guard role? Can he score consistently? And he got off to a really, really slow start this year. So it was like, okay, they didn't give this kid a chance and he's not taking advantage of it. But he picked it up and now he's one of the – he is, I think, along with Derek White, having a – one of those guys who just has come up and had a career year for the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that jumps out to me about Peyton Pritchard at this point is that he's the one guy at the beginning of the season who was in the rotation that we weren't sure would last and be there at this point. I thought his spot was very much up in the air, particularly when, as Gary noted, he got off to a slow start. You know, but give him credit. I mean, he has figured out a way to establish his role, create an identity for himself with this team. And those are things that he either did not do previously or he didn't get an opportunity to do. And this is a year where all the stars have aligned and have allowed him to be a guy that steps on the floor. And you're not thinking that he's on the floor so that someone else can get a rest. You're thinking he's on the floor because he can help this team win some games and do some things. He's answered a lot of the questions about his game and how it will relate to the Celtics team, specifically on defense. The thing about Peyton, he ain't locking nobody up, but he's not a defensive liability either. He's not a two-way buster or anything like that. So that's the word of the day, two-way buster. He's a good player. Payton is a he's legitimately a good player, a player who, when you look at what he's contributing to this team and you look at his contract, he's one of the best bargains on this team. I look at him and Derek White, two of the best bargains you'll find in the NBA right now for what they do on a team that's really good. But the challenge now is, can you maintain that level of impact? And not the scoring and assist and all that stuff, but just impact. Can you maintain that in the playoffs? Because his minutes aren't going to be as, I think, robust or abundant as they are now, unless Drew's injury is, a little bit more serious or severe than we think. But can he still nonetheless make a difference when he's in the game? And that's the next level for Peyton Pritchard at this point. Because everything he's done right now, he's checked up all the boxes that you want for a backup point guard in on the roster that's really good. But can he do it in the playoffs?
All right, before we close out, it's time for our favorite segment,
It's
checking
your
on
favorite segment,
the
Kwani.
bag. No, you admitted that you wanted to do this segment this week.
I wanted to do it, one, because I think it's fun, two, because you like it, and three, it always makes Gary just kind of rub his face
Cringe.
like, damn, why am I, this is, I didn't sign up for this.
It's relevant though. We're
Y'all
talking
treat me
about Grant
like I'm
Williams.
Peyton Pritchard. Y'all treat me like I'm Peyton Pritchard. This ain't what I signed
Oh
up for.
my God. Well, this ex is not a two-way buster. It's Grant Williams. He signed with Dallas in the offseason, which traded to Charlotte, as we know, which will be the team that Boston plays at the end of this road trip. Hornets not doing too well right now, but he's figured out his role specifically in Charlotte. 13.2 points per game right now with that team. So, have you been following Grant? What should we be looking forward to when the Celtics and Grant Williams reunite as well?
Grant's been quiet. He's been a lot quieter in
That's
Charlotte
the
than he was in Dallas
oxymoron.
and he was in Boston. To me, that means he's reading the room. He is recognizing that, you know what, let me just let's just keep it on the court and I'll do some funny stuff in the interviews, but I'm not necessarily gonna be that guy. I mean, when Mike Gorman claps back at you, that's like, whoa.
That's a good point, actually.
Whoa,
I was surprised.
that was very surprising. So I think Grant's figuring it out, and he is a I think he's a legitimate NBA player. I think he's a guy that when you're talking about top seven, top eight. I think he's good enough to be one of those guys on a really good team. In Charlotte, they're not a really good team. They need him to be more than just that, and he's averaging I think close to 30 minutes a game, shooting I think close to like 48, 49% from the field, averaging on the north side of 13 points since he's been in Charlotte. He's having a good year. But you always have to put it in the framework of he's having a good year on the third worst team in the Eastern Conference.
And if I could quickly add, for those who don't know the context, Grant Williams was called out by Mike Gorman as like annoying, a bad locker room guy. And Jason Tatum actually went on Twitter, now X, to just say he wasn't a bad locker room guy. He was a great teammate, but that still resonated with a lot of people because if Mike Gorman is calling you out, the man doesn't call people out ever.
That's
So
not his
there has to be
MO.
some truth to what he said, or someone thought he was annoying. So.
I don't think even Mike would say he's a bad guy, but he did talk a lot. Grant does talk a lot, and Grant knows he talks a lot. When we're around him in the locker room and on the court, he flaps his gums a lot. One of the most memorable moments that Grant probably doesn't want to remember is against Cleveland, where he was flapping them gums, went to the free throw line.
Oh my God.
Miss free throw one. Miss free throw two. They lose the game. So I'm a big fan of Grant. So I think, like I said, I think he's a good NBA player, not a great one, but a good one. And sometimes you got to do you got to make some mistakes in order to figure out how to build a career with longevity in this league. And I think he's made some mistakes, but I think he's figuring it out too. What you got, Gary?
I mean, I'm just tired of all the Grant hate. It's ridiculous. Like, he doesn't do anything off the floor. He's a part of the Player Association. He talks. So what? Like, we accuse young people of not talking and only talking in certain languages or only talking to people that they know or only talking about one subject, or we accuse. And then Grant was always a great guy to cover. in terms of, with the media, and I'm going to be perhaps biased here. He was great to us. He was open, honest. He was talkative. How you doing? You know, called us by our name, had respect for us. Like, you know, there's players that we cover that don't even act like they know our name and been around 8, 9, 10 years, you know? And to me, so what, he talks? He talks a lot. Yeah. Does he talk a lot? Yeah. Could it be annoying? But to me, for people to hang him out to dry and, you know, for calling a bad teammate, you know, and that's a lot to say. I can't say if I was not someone's teammate, it's hard for me to say that they're a bad teammate. Was he a teammate to you? Well, no, but I heard that, you know, like, it's just like, come on. Like, if you don't know, you like, I'll go as far with Grant. He's talkative. Does it probably annoy people? Of course. But this whole, like, when Michael Finley, oh, well, he was talking mess to Luka at practice. And Luka went, like, don't people talk mess at practice?
That's basketball. Yeah.
Like, why are you, like, you don't just throw the young kid? Grant's 25 years old. Like, you just gonna throw a young kid under the bus like that and be like, oh, he talked to Luka. You know how many practice fights I've covered, dudes throwing hands at practice, dudes having arguments at practice, walking out of practice, and we're going to talk about a dude talking stuff to the star player. Oh, and Luka got mad, so Luka went off on him and scored 20 points in a row. That shows you, like, don't mess with Luka. Like, everybody's been trying to get Luka to play and be in better. He's an amazing player, to be in better shape. And not complain. Like, it's not like Luka's a perfect player. It's not like he's Kobe or LeBron. Like, he's had his faults too. So, I mean, I just think I'm hopefully in Charlotte, Grant can find a place where it's home. I don't think it didn't work out in Dallas. He didn't play great. He wasn't always the thing I point out, you know, people have pointed out about him, I've heard, is like, he wasn't always in great shape in Boston. He wasn't always in great shape, and he didn't show up in great shape in Dallas. And that's something that, like, that's a legitimate gripe if you're gonna complain about Grant. But talking too much, he talks to Jason now. Like, him and Jason are still, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a bond there. I mean, you know, it's just to turn around and throw, act like he was out there just. We've seen, and especially Sherrod, you know, you covered the league a lot. We've seen dudes who are locker room cancers. Mm-hmm. We've seen guys who are just like, yeah, that ain't a good dude. Like, he's not a good teammate. We've seen in our regular lives, people that just, when you're around them, you can feel like, you know, I can only be around this person. I am not going to hang with this person any extra time. I can only be in groups or settings. I'm not going to, like, oh, what are you up to? Let's hang out. Like, you just know that they're not great people. They don't bring a good, positive energy.
Two-way buster vibe. That's what you get, that two-way buster vibe.
Yeah. You know? To me, I always got a positive energy from Grant. I didn't get negative. What? He told Donovan Mitchell he's going to hit two free throws. He missed them. It happens. Or, oh, he poked a bear against Miami and talking to Jimmy Butler. He was the only one who stood up. He's the only one in that series who stood up and said, F you, Jimmy. I'm dropping buckets too. Maybe if they got more of that, they'd have won a damn series. So, like, I get it. He talks a lot. So what? I'd rather have somebody talk a lot or talk to me than no, yeah.
Nothing at all.
And so, like, I'd rather have a personable personality. He's a smart kid, maybe too smart for a quote, too smart for his own good. You know, they've said it about other people. Well, he's too smart. Oh, he feels like he knows so much. Maybe he does.
Grant was
going to commit to Harvard. He was, Gary, like, his mother wanted him to play at Harvard before.
You and I have been around the game long enough to know when cats are being talked about as being too smart. That's code word for something that's another conversation for another podcast.
A whole other conversation.
He was going to, before he committed to Tennessee, he was thinking he was literally going to commit to Harvard.
I know.
So Grant's a smart guy, and I maybe too smart for his own good, or maybe you know, he does talk too much for his quote unquote talent. But I just think it's messed up that people are just coming at him like he's a bad guy, and he's not a bad guy. It bothers me a lot This kid's 25 years old. And I'm just not going to, like, you know, I'm not 20. I'm old. I'm slightly older than 25. I'm not coming at some, like, I'm not coming at somebody who's young enough to be my son or in their 20s and just MFing them, you know, for their, like, that just think, and you're three times a guy's age and you're MFing the guy. Like, he's just, he's why? What purpose does that do to throw someone under the bus like that? You know, unless the person's just a legitimately a bad guy.
Yeah.
Grant is not a bad guy. That's the thing that's what pisses me off. It's like, he talks too much. So what? We know plenty of people who talk a lot. You know, people, okay, if I catch them in a conversation, I'm going to have to, like,
meeting at 10.
Oh, limb, I got to roll, because you know they're going to talk your ear off. Does that make them a bad person? No, they just talk a lot. And sometimes you're ready for it. Sometimes, you know what? I'm ready for a 20-minute conversation. Yeah. Other times, you're like,
not today.
Damn it, I got to roll. I'd love to talk. You got to figure it. It's okay.
I left my wallet. I got to run and go get my wallet.
Yeah, damn. Oh, you know, like.
What do you need your wallet for? Everything's free.
Yeah, that's what happens. Like, does that make the person a bad person? Does that make them a bad teammate? Like, I'm just tired of the Grant hate. Like, because I think he's a good kid, and he's trying to get it. And as much as we deal with dudes that are really not good people over the years, people that are out there just doing not good things off the floor, who are all about just getting paid and quite putting up their numbers and don't care about winning and all those. And there's a lot of guys in the league like that. To point out Grant is like some kind of, like, you know, bad guy or bad teammate, and then throw him under the bus when he didn't, you know, I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's right. I'm just not going to do that. The kid's 25 years old. If he's got less, like Sherrod said, Sherrod's son's probably, and he's 25, he got lessons to learn, but he's a polished, good young man.
Yeah.
Does he have lessons at 25? Do we all have lessons to learn? And I know Kwani, it was like 3 years ago, but do we all have do we all have lessons to learn? Are we a finished product at 25? No. Do we still have life lessons to learn? Of course. Are we still in the midst of the process? Yes. So let's, like, lay off Grant and not make him out to be some pariah or some, like, just a bad apple in the bunch, and just respect that he's growing. And did he probably make some mistakes? Of course. Did he probably talk too much on the team bus? Yeah. Like, bad teammate? Like, I just didn't sense that. I sensed the in Boston, they didn't want to pay him $50 million because...
Understandable.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't want to pay him $50 million, and because it was going to have long-term cap repercussions, and they found a place, and they got a cheaper model in O'Shea Brissett. It hasn't worked out, but Derek White's developed. They've been able to move forward. So, like, I just let's stop all the Grant hate. Like, let's do a campaign on that. Let's do commercials and ads and, like, stop all. I look forward to seeing them. I think the Hornets come back to Boston before the season ends.
April 12th.
Hopefully he gets some nice love when he comes back and some appreciation. But all that was just the Grant hate and the, you know, that was just unnecessary. If you, you know, unless that guy's really causing trouble, and we know trouble, Sherrod, we know trouble, we know, you know, some of the things that's gone on in the history of this league with teammates, leave him alone on that one.
Absolutely. And you can contribute to the Grant Williams pack that Gary Washburn is starting, dialing 1-800.
Stop Grant.
Grant. Oh, goodness.
Like we mentioned, ahead is one more game in Atlanta. They close out that road trip in New Orleans and then Charlotte. By the time we reconvene, they'll be back home at the TD Garden. So that'll be something to look forward to. We appreciate everyone that's listened to this podcast. Thanks for sticking around. Of course, If you haven't already, subscribe. Share with a friend that might be a little upset about that loss to Atlanta and tell them that there is hope in the future. So,
what? All the Grant Williams lovers out there, we here. We here for
we
you.
We hear you. We're here for you, and we support you.
Exactly. The Gary Washburn, Grant Williams pack.
Done. Solidified. Until next week, for A'shaun Blakely and Gary Washburn, I'm Kwani Lunis, and this is the Big 3 Podcast.